This is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Christine Allen. B.J. Lederman wrote the theme music for many public radio shows, including Morning Edition, Marketplace, and Science Friday. After decades in the music business as a composer and performer, Lederman has finally released his very first album of songs. We'll hear a little music from that album in the next half hour as B.J. Lederman talks about his new album, his obsession with the Beatles, and how to write catchy theme music. B.J. Lederman, welcome to Take Note.
Christine, I want to thank you for taking the time to do this. This is my first time out as a rock and roll star, you know, and I appreciate you taking interest.
I want to ask you about some songs in a minute, but first, what is your secret to writing catchy public radio themes that give us a shot of endorphins every time we hear them and never get stale, no matter how many times we've heard them? How do you do that?
Well, first of all, thanks for the compliment. That's very nice of you. I mean, part of me doesn't know. The short answer is simplicity. And I don't think I had to work hard at that because I'm no genius or anything, but simplicity in a melody will almost guarantee that the idea of the melody and the song seeps in through a person's, you know, gets to their soul. And the more difficult a piece is, you know, melodically, the harder it is for the average person to remember it, much less, you know, hum it.
Simplicity in the melody, but you've got a lot going on behind the melody, a lot of syncopation, rhythm. Makes you want to dance.
Okay, yeah, you know? I understand. I see what you're getting at. I'm a drummer, Chris.
That explains it.
I started banging on drums before I started with the piano, I think. And the piano is a percussion instrument. And so the way I play piano is like the way Ringo plays drums. It's just beat and groove. I tell the guys in my band, never ever point to me and say, take it, BJ. I'm not doing it. I'm not giving you a lead. No way. I'm just doing the rhythmic part down there. You know, chords on my right hand and octave on my left hand. And it seems to work out that way.
Public radio themes have you done now? Morning Edition, Weekend Edition, Marketplace, Science Friday?
Yep, right, the Science Friday theme.
And Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and the Stump the Chumps segment theme inside Car Talk.
Oh, yes, for Car Talk. Where do you start when you're asked to do a theme for a show? How does the process start?
Well, it starts with talking with the producer or producers and finding out what the audience of the show is going to be, what the crux of the idea of the show is about. And then it's all about feel. And because I am not technically trained in music, I don't really read music. I can follow scores and I can read the guitar tablature on top of, sheet music. But basically, it's getting together and having them let me know how they want the audience to feel when they've heard this music. And you know, my job, as far as theme music is concerned, is in a very short period of time, usually a minute or less, to turn them inside out, basically. Turn the listener inside out and put a certain feeling about the upcoming show, which they then can connect to the show, and it'll automatically set them up every time they hear my theme in just about 59 seconds at the top. The easiest way to do it, you know, and I don't have any shame about this, I'll tell them, hey, look, tell me, you know, are there any themes out there that you like? How about pop songs? What bands, what pop songs do you like or dislike? You know, what do you want this thing not ever to sound like? And that will focus me down a great bit. Then I'll do a demo, and thankfully, usually the first one is the one they like. Sometimes they go through two or three, and then they get back to me and say, you know what, we really like that first one. I think they just want to make me work.
When you did the theme for Science Friday, there were some what you call Easter eggs put in there. First of all, what's an Easter egg, and can you divulge anything about those?
I learned about Easter eggs when the first Macintosh came out. And you bet, I bought it in 1984. I didn't even know what that thing was, but I took a look at that cute little, you know, screen with the hello written in cursive writing on it. And I said, you know, I don't know what that thing's going to do, but I'm going to get one. And I learned that inside, if you were brave enough to void your warranty and unscrew the cover and lift the cover up, inside the casing of the first Macintosh were the signatures of everybody on the Macintosh team that created that computer. So
oh, wow.
In software, there's, and in video games, there are always Easter eggs that the creators bury inside, and you have to come across them, I guess, in video games by taking certain paths or doing certain directional strokes or whatever, and suddenly something will come up. In this case, it was interesting because Science Friday was the only surviving show of the series that NPR used to air that was called Talk of the Nation. Monday through Thursday, mm-hmm. it was discussion of various topics, political or otherwise. And on Friday, it was Talk of the Nation, Science Friday with Ira Flatow. And so when I learned that he survived the cut, I emailed him and said, congratulations, want to celebrate? And he emailed me back and said, new theme? I said, you bet. And so at the very end, a very high note starts beeping and booping. And it spells out Sci-Fry, S-C-I-F-R-I, in Morse code. And I'd gotten that idea from a Yes song, Close to the Edge. In part of Close to the Edge, Rick Wakeman does a similar thing, and I've yet to figure out if it's Morse code or if it's just gibberish, but he's got me awake at night trying to figure this thing out, and I will soon. Maybe it's backwards, and I have to figure the thing out backwards.
Well, thank you for divulging that. Now I can sleep at night because
sure.
I was trying to figure it out. I suspected it was something about those high bleebly notes there.
And maybe there's something else in there I don't know about. I mean, maybe I put, you know, if you play it backwards in Morse code, it may say Paul is dead or turn me on, dead man. Turn me on, dead man.
Okay, we've had a lot of Beatles references, so I might as well ask you, I'll ask you about the Beatles.
Yeah, if not for the Beatles, I would not be talking to you now. We'll put it that way. If not for the Beatles, I would probably have gone to, you know, med school or law school like my parents would have wanted, and I would not be the train wreck of a human being that I am now in the music business. Dad used to work at a department store, and he brought Meet the Beatles home one day, mm-hmm. and it was around this, I think I had just seen the Beatles perform on Ed Sullivan's show for the first time, and I went nuts. I had a friend who played drums and piano. He went nuts. So David Lively and I, we got a little band together called the Lively Sound Dimension. Yes, folks, LSD painted in psychedelic colors on the bass drum head. Little did I know I would actually get to know that drug quite well later in life. No, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Anyway.
too late.
So from that moment on, you know, we just wanted to be the bloody Beatles. You know, we did everything, the haircuts, and, you know, we went to school talking like this to each other. You know, it's all the same to you, that is. And I'm sure it influenced everything that I became musically. There was a, and there still is. The interesting thing about this album, and it's called BJ, is that it is varied in style. Each song sounds markedly different from the other. And that's because some of these songs were actually written 2 and 3 decades ago, and some of them were written as late as a year or two ago. And that's one of the things that keeps the album so fresh. But you will definitely detect a Beatlesque tone in some of it. There's one section of a song that people just call me on that says, hey, man, that was Billy Joel right there. And I say, yeah, because I mentioned a heart attack, you know, and I think, heart attack, and I should have done that reverb and delay on it, but I forgot.
The album begins, sometimes has this great hook at the beginning, not really a chorus, but a hook, and it's really gets you in there. So did Sometimes come from
yes.
that hook? Is that,
yes,
is that the
that
part
is
you
probably
out
the
first?
Most powerful opening of a song I've ever written. It's just so ballsy and so fun. And then, you know, I come out with my half-scream Lennon singing thing, and we're off to the races.
Sometimes I think of all the times I think about the times I'm thinking about nothing else but you.
When it was time to sequence this album, figure out what songs would go where, it was a very easy chore for me because I knew that Sometimes was going to open the album, and I knew that Praise One Another with my friend Jim Arundel singing was going to close it. It's funny, it's not a concept album. You know, it's no Sgt. Pepper or anything, but if you do listen to it from beginning to end, it'll take you on a fabulous sonic roller coaster ride.
That brings me to History 9/11, which is really powerful protest song, starting out from Vietnam and going through today.
People are probably going to be wondering why I released this song now when I wrote it long ago. I wrote this song, I believe, in the mid-2000s. And it was to be a general history lesson about how easy it is to get involved in a war. And, you know, while I do start with Vietnam and I reference Richard Nixon and I reference George W. Bush, I'm basically calling us to task when I said we, you know, we voted him in again after we knew that he had messed up with this thing. Why did we do that? It's can't really blame him. It's our fault in the voting booth, as it usually is. But to the younger generation coming up who might look at this song and go, yeah, I've heard of Nixon, and yeah, I know Bush and stuff, but what does all this really mean? The lesson that I'd like them to take away from it is that just change the names. If you don't learn this story and learn this lesson, it's going to pop up in your generation at least once, and it's up to you to see the warning sign and get out there and try to stop it before it starts.
We all waved our flags in a stupor as we tended our bonds and our stocks. But after a while we grew tired of our sons coming home in a box. Then the young people rose up in anger, said we're not gonna take anymore. They took to the streets and told President Nixon just what he could do with his war.
And at the end of the song, it changes to, we can reach the sky with our feet on the ground. You know, our eyes clear and wide open. All we have to do is make the decision and take some action together.
And we hit the ground. We were when we heard the sound that ended our childhood and turned our whole world upside down.
I'm Christine Allen, and this is Take Note on WPSU. If you're just joining us, my guest is B.J. Lederman, composer of themes for some of your favorite public radio shows like Morning Edition, Weekend Edition, and Marketplace. After decades in the music business, Lederman has just released his debut album titled B.J. How is it working with Bella Fleck? How'd the Bella tunes come together?
That was magic. First of all, I had about 10 or 12 short instrumental pieces that I had put together on my electronic keyboards and stuff in the 1980s that I had already mixed together. I had lost the multitrack, but I had these beautiful sounding mixes of really funky, quirky little jaunty melodies and rhythms. And my wonderful assistant had worked with Bela Fleck's manager before, and we were at the Leaf Festival in Asheville, which is a wonderful music festival and arts festival. And she got me backstage and introduced us. And I just had it in my head to ask him, would he consider being on a couple of my songs if I sent him some of these backing tracks to listen to? And I did, and, you know, some months went by, but he said he loved three of them. Why don't we try three of them? And so he invited me to his home studio in Nashville, and basically he let me produce him, which is, it's the wrong word to use, because he knew what he was doing, he knew what he was going to play. We just rolled the tape, and he laid down these beautiful, beautiful melodies and leads over this stuff. Came together quite well, so I'm extremely fortunate to have Bela Fleck on my one and only album titled BJ.
All right, is that really your mother's voice on the answering machine in Mom's phone message?
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. When she died in 2010, I had been saving a bunch of her voicemail messages to me on my computer, and I edited a few of them together one day and mixed them to just some. I think it was Garage Mahal, really funky background music. And I played it for some people, and they were all hysterical about it. It was kind of wistful to me, but they said, man, you got to put this on the album. So we just set up a groove, and it's pretty hilarious.
DJ, have you talked to an exterminating company about setting off a bomb in your house? The company called National Exterminating. They take care of fleas.
It's the quintessential Jewish mother thing, you know, to an only child. BJ, don't buy romaine lettuce. There's something wrong with romaine lettuce.
You do a very good impression of her, actually.
Oh, sure. Sure I do.
And then your dog figures in the next song, Maisie.
Maisie. Yeah. I was very lucky. In fact, it's pretty interesting. Maisie is a rescue from the Virginia German Shepherd Rescue League. And Maisie was put together with me about a week before my mom fell and passed away a couple of days later. And Maisie has proven to be my saving grace as far as, you know, companionship and protection and love. And there's something about Maisie. So I wrote this song from Maisie's point of view, which is crazy because I kind of sing it like Frank Zappa. You know,
my name is Maisie, and I'm BJ's dog. He saved me from the shelter's deathly fog. He's got my eyebrows, he's got my nose. So now I go wherever he goes.
It's short and sweet, and it's actually being made into a music video. It'll be my second music video after Walking Down the Street, which is out now.
Oh, yes. It's kind of a bizarre video. Can you describe it for me?
The music video is an animated cartoon that was done by John Schnall of Quality Schnality. He is, there's something wrong with this guy. He's weird, and I just loved his look. So I said, look, John, I'm not going to give you too much direction, just this. Make it look like a cross between Yellow Submarine and Monty Python. And so most of it is cartoon animation, and then he had me take various pictures of my face, you know, with different vowel sounds, my mouth moving differently, and send them in, and he did the rest. And basically it's about a guy, maybe me, maybe not, who is dumped by his girlfriend and is so despondent, he goes to the top of a very tall building, and he jumps off in the first verse. The rest is what he sees on the way down, you know, peeking into windows. He sees his house from here. He wonders, man, did I leave the oven on? It's very comical, but I'm sure people are going to be scratching their heads at the first verse. Just let me tell you that it ends well. All ends well. Not to worry. Listen to the whole song. You'll be glad you did.
Man, I can see my house from here. Did I leave the oven on? Hey, have never seemed so clear. Just a few seconds.
Your album is called BJ, but you were going to call it Natural Public Lederman. Did NPR take exception to that name?
Yeah, Natural Public Lederman. It turns out I had a graphic made that was using their logo colors. They really haven't called themselves National Public Radio for a long time now. And so for 3 years, I was promoting this project with this logo. And a couple of months ago, I got a very nice phone call, and a suggestion was made that I said, yeah, these do look strangely like your logo colors. Isn't that strange? And so I had this plan B in my back pocket, a wonderful photo that Paul M. Howie, photographer and writer in Asheville, had taken of me during a live show in which he captured the reflection of the keys on my piano in my sunglasses. And I ran that shot through an app on the iPhone called Prisma to just blow it out in psychedelic colors. And that's it, my friend, good friend, art director Tammy Dean made the BJ logo, and that's the front cover of the thing.
It's a great picture. And BJ Lederman, actually, BJ, it's a better name for the CD because everyone knows your name. They say it on Morning Edition all the time, on Weekend Edition,
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know what it is? I have been so scared to... I'm going to have to talk to my shrink about this some more. But I'm overcoming this problem. My entire identity, since I realized that there was this... I'm using air quotes now, brand being built behind my back over the decades with my music being played and my name, being said on the air as a credit. Thank you, Jay Kernis, producer, that I never considered myself apart from NPR as being whole and worthwhile. So I think that by going ahead with BJ, showing my face, it's a step toward independence, which I'm eventually going to have to take. The interesting thing is the themes that are on the air, there's a good chance that those will survive me, They may get rearranged by someone else. Jim Pugh did all of the arranging on anything that you hear that has orchestra, live orchestra on it. For instance, Weekend Edition. That's the wonderful work of Jim Pugh, who now plays trombone with Steely Dan.
Oh,
can
my.
You believe it?
Wow.
Oh, yeah, I'm a lucky soul. So that's how that works. So I think that probably it's the first step in breaking the umbilical cord of dependence, at least in my own head. It's like, I'm nothing if not for NPR.
Not true.
They've been very, very good to me, I got to tell you.
One thing more I wanted to ask you about, you've also been a writer on some TV shows, including The Chris Rock Show, The Cartoon Network, Spike TV, and the Christian Broadcasting Network. There's a lot of variety there. Can you explain that variety? It confuses me.
It's when you're starting out and doing stuff, composers got to eat. So I was living in Virginia Beach in the Norfolk area, home of Pat Robertson and the 700 Club and all that stuff. And I figured, if they're going to hire me to do some music... maybe I'll be able to surreptitiously, turn some heads, if not change minds. But all I was able to do was background music. And it's funny, I discovered some video that I had digitized lately. A big legacy box thing came, and I opened it, and the first thing I clicked on was my ex-wife, Denise, and myself huddled around a microphone singing the CBN jingle to music. with our headsets on, so you couldn't hear anything. It was silence, silence, silence. And I forgot what the line was, but then it was like, "You're da da on CBN." And I just fell out of my chair laughing. It was crazy funny. By the way, Denise is on this album of mine.
What does she do?
She's a singer. When I met her, she was singing for the Virginia Symphony Chorus. And, you know, I had a band. So she started singing with my band, and then we got married. And then we got unmarried, and we still love each other, and so she still sings with us.
Great. I understood from what I read, I thought, that you'd actually done copywriting for some TV, like words.
Yes, yeah. I did. I did copywriting with my dear friend Howard Hoffman, Howie, who actually is the art director and creative director person who is turning the song Maisie's song into a music video. He's out in LA with a group called Exceptional Minds. It's where they train youngsters and young adults with autism to do animation on computers, do computer animation. And these folks are actually responsible for doing some animated segments on some top studio, Hollywood studio movies. So they're going to be doing this thing for me. But way back in the day, I can't even tell you what decade it was, Howie and BJ were art director and writer, and I was the writer. And we were writing for clients like Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network, Fox Kids Network, Tyco Toys, a game called Looney Tunes Smush'em.
Looney Tunes Smush'em?
Yeah, it was a board game. Kids, yes, we actually opened up a board on the ground, like cardboard, with the little tracks on it, and you mold your little piece. You could mold Bugs Bunny out of Play-Doh. You know, you mold Elmer Fudd out of Play-Doh, or Daffy Duck out of Play-Doh, and you stick the feet on them, and you roll the dice or spin the wheel, and I don't know how it went. But there was one thing where I think Daffy said, "This is a train wreck waiting to happen," and I chimed in with, "Well, why wait?" That was my glory moment in copywriting. Why wait? I think I got a raise from that.
So you, of course, wrote a lot of jingles in New York in the 80s for various things. Is there anything we might recognize from that era?
I doubt it, but there's one thing that may still be on the air, and it's the musical logo for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting on PBS. So on some PBS shows now, before the show, you might see these three blue bars raise up from the ground, and the music is on a Moog synthesizer, and it's just like, bow, 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 do-do-do-do-do-do-do. The following program is made possible by,
Before you go, could you please sing the Morning Edition theme for me?
Oh, my God. Me.
Or part of it, anyway.
Oh, I hate to get up in the morning. Please don't wake me up this morning. Let me stay in bed and sleep. Ba-da-da-da-da-da. That's all you get for this early.
BJ Lederman, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's composer BJ Lederman, best known for his catchy public radio themes for shows like Morning Edition, Weekend Edition, Marketplace, and Science Friday. He's just released his first album of songs titled BJ. Thanks for joining us for Take Note on WPSU. I'm Christine Allen. You can hear this and other WPSU programs on our website at wpsu.org/radio.